It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
In keeping with President Reagan's legacy, I do not ask about a nominee's personal opinions. What matters is not a judge's political views, but whether they can set aside those views to do what the law and the Constitution require. I am pleased to say that I have found, without doubt, such a person. Tonight, it is my honor and privilege to announce that I will nominate Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the United States Supreme Court.
That was last night, about 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. The President of the United States gathering in the White House in the East Room while dignitaries. I know he had invited a lot of Democratic senators who refused to come, many of those in the swing states. A lot of senators there, a lot of judicial notables, including Edwin Meese, who used to be the Attorney General under President Bush. I remember I knew General Meese well. I still do, but I don't see him very often. Wonderful man. He was there as well as Antonin Scalia's widow was sitting there. So it was just, it's always very moving because I think most people, certainly in that room, understand the import of this nomination. President Trump went on to talk about Brett Kavanaugh's history just a little bit, so let's let the president explain it.
Brett's wife, Ashley, and their two daughters, Margaret and Liza, have joined us on the podium, and thank you and congratulations to you as a family. Thank you. Judge Kavanaugh has impeccable credentials, unsurpassed qualifications, and a proven commitment to equal justice under the law. A graduate of Yale College and Yale Law School, Judge Kavanaugh currently teaches at Harvard, Yale, and Georgetown. Throughout legal circles, he is considered a judge's judge, a true thought leader among his peers. He is a brilliant jurist with a clear and effective writing style, universally regarded as one of the finest and sharpest legal minds of our time. And just like Justice Gorsuch, he excelled as a clerk for Justice Kennedy. Judge Kavanaugh has devoted his life to public service. For the last 12 years, he has served as a judge on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals with great distinction, authoring over 300 opinions which have been widely admired for their skill, insight, and rigorous adherence to the law. Among those opinions are more than a dozen that the Supreme Court has adopted as the law of the land. Beyond his great renown as a judge, he is active in his community. He coaches CYO basketball, serves meals to needy families, and, having learned from his mom, who is a school teacher in D.C., tutors children at local elementary schools. There is no one in America more qualified for this position and no one more deserving.
All right, that was the president's comments. Of course, he made it personal. Brett Kavanaugh was there with his wife and two daughters. He made it very personal himself when he introduced them. It was very sweet. I'm sure Brett Kavanaugh is a fine moral man. He certainly, he was the White House counsel under President George W. Bush, so George W. Bush is very happy about this. He was raised in D.C., as you heard the president say. His mother was a teacher. He's been with the D.C. Circuit now for about a dozen years, so he has a very long paper trail in terms of his decisions. I'm going to let you hear. I'm in an odd position. Can I just say this right up front? Sort of an odd position. We talked about the four nominees yesterday, and they were, of course, Brett Kavanaugh, Raymond Kethledge, Amy Coney Barrett, and Thomas Hardiman. And I guess you probably could say, of the four selections there, he's probably the least likely, the least conservative on the list in terms of his record. And therefore, there's kind of a mixed bag. You're going to hear a lot of conservatives coming out and supporting him today, because that's kind of what happens. It's kind of a decision on whether you should agree that he's a great candidate and not say anything negative about his record, with the idea that he would get confirmed, or you say what you really think because you think this is a very crucial time and a very important nomination, and that this might not have been the first choice. So I have a guest coming on in a few minutes, and he's going to talk to us about Brett's record. And I'm sure he does not, I'm confident, probably doesn't hold the same position that American Family Association does, but we're very concerned about it. In fact, we are opposing his confirmation. And there are reasons for that. The reasons are that he has some of the writings that he's made a ton of decisions. He's come down the right way on a lot of those decisions from our perspective, but his arguments when he was coming down on those decisions are very troubling. I would just point you to a Federalist article that says federal Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh has a troubling record on religious liberty. And I think that that's just part of it. One of them is in the case against the Priest for Life when Obamacare was forcing them and like Little Sisters of the Poor to buy contraceptive coverage, to pay for contraceptive coverage and birth control and all of that. When he actually weighed in on that, it wasn't really that he didn't think the government had the right to compel that. He ruled in their favor for other reasons. I'll talk to Ken Kuklowski about this in just a second, and he can explain from his perspective. He's the attorney here, what actually happened. We're also concerned that Judge Kavanaugh was the judge that actually was the first person to decide that Obamacare could be called a tax and therefore be found constitutional. Many people feel that he's the one who, it's his writing and his theory on that, that just Judge Roberts borrowed to legalize Obamacare, which was just a stunning blow, really, to the country. And then the other thing is on a decision he made about an illegal immigrant girl who wanted to have an abortion. He ended up ruling these decisions are hard to explain. Let's just say the outcome was that she was not allowed to, that she was not, the abortion was not paid for, and Brett Kavanaugh was part of the judicial body that weighed in for her not to have that. But his reasoning was not that government, that she didn't have a right to, and that the government should not have provided that. He had other reasons. And so that's a concern. So that's why American Family Association may be, you know, like the standalone group today that you hear who's very concerned about Brett Kavanaugh, because we felt that someone like Amy Coney Barrett was a much more controversial choice. It would have caused a great deal more battles in the Senate, no question about it. Brett Kavanaugh is an easy choice. He's part of the, as far as I'm concerned, the Washington establishment. So, but nice guy. So what else can I say? I want you to hear from him. You can hear from the candidate because he spoke last night. This should be encouraging. This is his opening statement. Let's listen.
Mr. President, thank you. Throughout this process, I've witnessed firsthand your appreciation for the vital role of the American judiciary. No president has ever consulted more widely or talked with more people from more backgrounds to seek input about a Supreme Court nomination. Mr. President, I am grateful to you, and I'm humbled by your confidence in me. Thank you. 30 years ago, President Reagan nominated Anthony Kennedy to the Supreme Court. The framers established that the Constitution is designed to secure the blessings of liberty. Justice Kennedy devoted his career to securing liberty. I am deeply honored to be nominated to fill his seat on the Supreme Court.
Yes, see, so that's troubling, too, because Justice Kennedy was made some terrible decisions. He is the one responsible, the justice, the swing vote, and the person who wrote the opinion legalizing gay marriage. Singing his praises is not comforting to those of us who are concerned about future rulings. And I have to say that because we have seen conservative presidents make choices that were not good, and we saw senators not paying any attention voting for these, like Ruth Bader Ginsburg voting, I think it was 98 senators voted in favor of her, not paying attention, like, oh yeah, she's a nice lady, she's kind of pretty and she's interesting, so let's vote for her. And so this is why we're sort of waving the red flag here, saying this is not a sure choice for conservative principles, and we are concerned about it. Brett Kavanaugh goes on to talk about his judicial philosophy, which sounds really good if he'll only hold to it. Let's listen.
My judicial philosophy is straightforward. A judge must be independent and must interpret the law, not make the law. A judge must interpret statutes as written, and a judge must interpret the Constitution as written, informed by history and tradition and precedent.
Yes, so that's what he says. And, you know, he's right. Let's just hope he does that. I just don't understand why. I'll have to ask Ken about this. I'm not sure how you could work for a justice like Kennedy, who did not do what Kavanaugh just laid out there. He did not decide the law, certainly on the gay marriage case, based on the Constitution and the law. He sort of made up stuff as he went along. And Kavanaugh was his clerk, one of his many clerks. But Kavanaugh then went on to give his closing statements. Let's listen.
Tomorrow, I begin meeting with members of the Senate, which plays an essential role in this process. I will tell each senator that I revere the Constitution. I believe that an independent judiciary is the crown jewel of our constitutional republic. If confirmed by the Senate, I will keep an open mind in every case, and I will always strive to preserve the Constitution of the United States and the American rule of law.
All right, so that's his closing statement last night, and needless to say, this is the odd thing, too, to have to be opposing Brett Kavanaugh is an odd juxtaposition, because then that makes us right alongside the crazies on the left, and they are crazy. Let me let you hear a little bit about what they're saying about him. This is the liberal response to the nomination. It's clip 7.
We must ensure that we defeat Brett Kavanaugh. All our rights are at stake.
We are in the fight of our lives.
He is a dangerous man who will endanger our fundamental freedoms.
This just must not become the next justice on the Supreme Court. And what that will take is all of us fighting as hard and as long as we can.
I am not going to kid anybody. This is a tough fight, but it is a fight that we can win.
Yeah, so you see how this goes. I mean, it's funny because the Women's March sent out a press release before the nomination was made, and they actually sent it all out, these flyers and everything, and they left out the name because they did it in such a hurry. They didn't realize that the wording on their opposition piece said that justice, and then it just had X's. They opposed Justice X because they didn't know the name and because they did it so hastily. You know, they were going to oppose whoever was nominated. They didn't have a preference. They didn't choose someone who was better. They knew, and they said up front, we will oppose whoever Donald Trump nominates. And that includes Brett Kavanaugh, who, you know, may not be their worst enemy on that list. So we'll see. Ken Kuklowski joins me next. Ken is such a seasoned professional on this, and is very close to some of the choices that were made in the White House. So we'll find out what how he feels about this when we return. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for a healthcare plan, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2.5 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings may be less or more, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. Just hit *345. That's *345. *345.
Come join Sandy Rios for a walk back in time when she was a young grieving mom, discovering firsthand how God's strength is made perfect in weakness.
I'll be the song for you. I'll be the symphony.
The music of Sasha's Song, Sandy Rios' first album project, is a reminder of God's faithfulness.
Would God sustain us?
Produced by John Ennis of the Billy Graham Crusade with members of the Indianapolis Orchestra, this beautiful music will lift your heart.
Like peering through a window blurred with rain, emotions run together in a flood of doubt and pain. For he is
available on CD at afastore.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at Truett McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is the one, number one, is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
People in New York City are spending as much as $650 to sleep in a tent. The New York Times calls it glamping. It's the latest outdoor craze among millennials. Urban campers are plopping down serious money for the chance to pitch a tent on Governor's Island. But glamping is not exactly John Candy and the great outdoors. Campers are lavished with gourmet meals and Turkish bathrobes, and they don't have to worry about tossing and turning on the ground in a sleeping bag. That's because every tent comes with an actual bed, along with a down comforter. A Campgrounds of America survey found 93% of millennials would like to go camping this year, but many said they might try glamping instead. Be warned, though, they do not roast weenies on Governor's Island, but they do serve s'mores. And for $650, those better be some mighty good s'mores. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
We must ensure that we defeat Brett Kavanaugh. All our rights are at stake.
We are in the fight of our lives.
He is a dangerous man who will endanger our fundamental freedoms.
This just must not become the next justice on the Supreme Court. And what that will take is all of us fighting as hard and as long as we can.
I am not going to kid anybody. This is a tough fight, but it is a fight that we can win.
Yeah, all right, so then, I thought you might like to hear that again. Of course, the left is going crazy, and they will go crazy. They've gone crazy for the last couple of decades, beginning with Robert Bork. That's the first one I remember where it was so horrible, the confirmation fights, where they would just rake people over the coals, insult them, and get very personal, talk about their faith. I remember one candidate sitting in the confirmation room who brought her pastor, and she was a candidate but, you know, from the heartland. I don't recall which state, but she was, you know, honored to have her pastor with her, and yet they mocked her for that. It is like an experience like no other. I think even as she was a wise judge, but she was really innocent in the with the wickedness of Washington and its ways. And so this is what's going to be happening. And as a matter of fact, George Rasley from Conservative HQ writes about this. He says, all right, so he was talking about how the left is just going crazy. And as a matter of fact, I already told you the Women's March sent out a statement where they said, in response to Donald Trump's nomination of XX to the Supreme Court of the United States, the Women's March releases the following statement. So they embarrassed themselves by not even remembering the name. And also, John Nolte writes that the New York Times is actually calling for Godfather tactics to stop the SCOTUS nominee. They basically say, barring some unforeseen development, the president will lock in a 5-4 conservative majority, shifting the court solidly to the right for a generation. This is all the more reason for Democrats and progressives to take a page from the Godfather to go to the mattresses on this issue. Now think about that. That's the New York Times urging the left, progressives, to go to the mattress like the Godfather. Remember the Godfather? Remember the headless horse? Remember the violence of it? So this is serious business that could result in some serious consequences. Kavanaugh is the pick of the president of the United States. We've been talking about that. Ken Kukowski joins us this morning, and I'm so glad he is, because Ken follows this so closely and seems to have the records of these guys in his head like an encyclopedia. Ken is the senior counsel and director of strategic affairs for First Liberty Institute. He's a very highly respected personality in Washington. People look to him for his judgment and experience. He's written so many different things, Wall Street Journal, New York Post, Investor's Business Daily, and on I could go. But Ken, first of all, good morning.
Good morning, Sandy.
Hey, I wanted, were you surprised by Brett Kavanaugh being chosen?
No, I was not.
Well then, Ken, I'm kind of in a tough spot here because Brett Kavanaugh is not very exciting to American Family Association. I would like to know, okay, tell me this. What do you think Brett Kavanaugh's strengths are? What are his strengths?
His strengths are his method of constitutional interpretation and statutory interpretation. He believes that the words of the Constitution must be interpreted according to their original public meaning. Excuse me, and he believes regarding federal statutes that a federal judge must adhere to the text that Congress has passed, that if Congress passes a dumb law or a counterproductive law or an inconsistent law or whatever, it's still the job of the judge to follow that law. Now, regarding the issues that I would think that AFA supporters would especially care about, the U.S. Constitution, the way it's written, the U.S. Constitution interpreted according to its original public meaning, and that means interpreted with reference to its text and its structure and its history, include all the protections that people could ask for, whether it is free speech or religious liberty and the free exercise of religion or a properly understood definition of the establishment of religion, whether it is for matters of Second Amendment rights or immigration or limits on federal power in the 10th Amendment. I mean, all of those are part of the original public meaning of the U.S. Constitution. So having a judge with a proven record of steadfast, principled analysis and brilliant analysis of those things, those are a solid pick that Americans can get behind and support.
You know, I'm just a common sense question. You know, the fact that he clerked, he's one of two nominees who clerked for Justice Kennedy. That is not a high bar to me, and I don't quite understand. And you can explain this. I know you can. If you clerk for someone like Kennedy who did not practice what you just said that Brett Kavanaugh says he believes in, that he, you know, Justice Kennedy found something in the Constitution none of us saw, and that was the right to gay marriage. So Justice Kennedy, who he worked
right for, alongside the right to abortion.
Right. And so how does a person work? How does that work? When you're a clerk for someone, do you, I'm sure you can have your own independent thought, but doesn't that influence your thinking to some extent?
No. Two-part answer, actually three parts, because my first part would be no, that it doesn't influence your thinking. Second, Neil Gorsuch clerked for Anthony Kennedy. And I'm not hearing anyone complaining about Justice Gorsuch.
Yeah.
Every justice, and there are nine of them, and of course, as we're talking now, the composition of that nine changes over time. But for each of the nine justices, they each have their own method and philosophy of what they look for in law clerks. Like, for example, Justice Clarence Thomas tries to hire only originalists, fellow originalists, people who share his philosophy of the Constitution. Justice Kennedy hires across the full board. He hires liberal clerks, he hires moderate clerks, and he hires conservative clerks. A couple of the most conservative legal minds I know in America were Kennedy clerks. So in the case of Justice Kennedy, getting hired by him, all that means is that you were proven to be very, very smart, and you went to a top-ranked school. It's no reflection at all on your judicial philosophy.
Let me ask you specifically, the concerns that we have, let me ask you about these, Ken. Certainly in the issue of the Affordable Care Act, Kavanaugh is being accused of, in his writings, he is, as I understand it, the first person who declared that Obamacare was a tax and not some sort of a payment required by people involuntarily. He labeled it a tax, and people are saying that John Roberts took that from Kavanaugh, and that's what caused him to make the terrible decision that he made. What would you say about that?
That is. Thank you for asking that, Sandy, because that is a very common misconception. So I'm grateful for the opportunity to set it straight. What Judge Kavanaugh did is, in fact, the exact opposite of what Chief Justice John Roberts did. What Judge Kavanaugh did is Congress, more than 100 years ago, passed a law to stop tax cheats, people who were trying not to pay federal taxes. It's called the Anti-Injunction Act, the AIA. And under the AIA, they thought, hey, some people might try not pay their taxes by saying, hey, this tax is unconstitutional. So what the AIA does is it says, if you want to challenge the constitutionality of a federal tax, you have to pay the tax. Then you have to petition the IRS to give you a refund. If they haven't given you a refund in 6 months, only then do federal courts have jurisdiction to hear your lawsuit. Now, and so that's the AIA. What Judge Gorsuch did is he made clear that he thought there were other parts. He signaled that he believed there were parts of the Obamacare Act, of the Obamacare law, that were unconstitutional, excuse me, but that looking at the individual mandate, he noticed that Obama had hid it in the tax code. And so he said, well, wait a second. He said, from a jurisdictional reason, from a standpoint of judicial restraint, and the facts that courts see, there's a lot of conservative thinking here, that courts can never act when they do not have jurisdiction to do so. He said, I think on this provision, that we have to wait until it goes into effect because it had not yet gone into effect. He said, I think we need to wait till it goes into effect, and then we have to wait 6 months beyond that, and then we have jurisdiction to hear all of these huge constitutional issues, which are extremely important and that we can get to, but we can only get to it when we have the legal authority to do so. So he said that about the AIA, saying they didn't have jurisdiction, and then did not reach any of the constitutional issues in the case. When a different case out of Florida went all the way to the Supreme Court, Chief Justice Roberts did the exact opposite. He said, I believe the individual mandate is not any type of tax for purposes of the AIA, but it is a tax under the Constitution, making it authorized by the Constitution. Instead of being interstate commerce, it is instead a tax. The dissenting justices in that case, NFIB v. Sebelius, really took the Chief Justice to task. They said, no, you can't have your cake and eat it too. If this is blocked by the AIA, then we don't have jurisdiction and you can't rule on it at all for now. But you cannot say it is not a jurisdiction for purposes of federal statute, but somehow still authorized as a tax under the U.S. Constitution. So he did the exact opposite. Kavanaugh said, I think the statute means we have to wait before ruling on the case, and so I'm not ruling on it. Robert said, I believe the statute does not block me from ruling on the case, and I'm going to uphold it as a tax under the Constitution. So that's where it's, the word tax comes up in both descriptions. So I understand the confusion, but nonetheless, people should firmly grasp the reality that what the Chief Justice did is that he took what Kavanaugh did and he flipped it upside down. He flipped it on its head. And that's how we got the Obamacare decision.
Okay, let me ask you about the second area of concern, and that is the decision in Priests for Life. And as we all know, Obamacare caused or forced Christian organizations like Little Sisters of the Poor, Priests for Life, to buy contraceptives, to pay for it, and maybe some cases covering abortifacients. The concern is that Kavanaugh's, not that he came down the wrong way, because he didn't. He came down the right way. They weren't forced to buy it. But that in his opinion, he agreed that the government has a compelling interest to force religious organizations to provide contraception and abortifacients for employees. All right, so what's the story there from your perspective, Ken?
Yeah, thank you again for that, 'cause that's another common misperception, Sandy. With all due respect to my friends who are lawyers who have said that, I think that is, again, and I want to say this with all respect, I think that is just an unsophisticated reading of what Judge Kavanaugh wrote. He wasn't saying that he believed there was a compelling interest here. He said he believed that the Supreme Court cases he was applying indicated that there was a compelling interest. And so he was faithfully adhering to his role as the judge on an inferior court, that once the U.S. Supreme Court has sent a signal, he is bound to follow it no matter how passionately he may disagree with it. And so he just stated. He never talked about, hey, I think this is a compelling interest. This is very important. All he said was, he said the Supreme Court, and he cited the case, has strongly indicated that, and then he laid that out. So no, I see that as a lower court judge who believes that for him to go further would be to act as a judicial activist, and that, again, it's, he understands, as a lower court judge, he understands once the Supreme Court decides something, Article 3 of the Constitution vests the judicial power, not in the whole federal judiciary, it vests it in the U.S. Supreme Court and in such inferior courts, that's the term the Constitution uses, as Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. And he understands as a judge on that inferior court that he is utterly bound by whatever the Supreme Court has done. So I did not at all see that as in any way something that should cause concern for pro-life people. And I want to say, by the way, you can also flip that the opposite way on another issue, because there was another judge being considered. Some people had concerns, you know, is this guy really solid on the Second Amendment? And they said, no, look at this case over here where he decided, where he was part of the court, and it said that the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms is a fundamental right. No, that guy doesn't deserve credit for that. I'm sure he probably believes it, but he doesn't deserve credit for that because he was just quoting a previous Supreme Court case that said the Second Amendment is a fundamental right. So whether it is a good decision or a decision that we don't like, if they're just quoting the Supreme Court and citing the Supreme Court, that they're just doing something that they have no choice about when they're a lower court judge.
All right, my guest is Ken Kukowski. Ken, can you stay with me a few more minutes?
Yeah, sure.
I want to talk to you about this last case, which has to do with the illegal immigrant who asked for an abortion. That needs to be explained and clarified also.
Absolutely.
And then I also want to talk to you about what's going to happen next in the Senate, because I'm real curious to know what your thoughts are, and I have some thoughts myself, so I'd love to just kind of brainstorm with you. Ken Kukowski, again, he's with First Liberty, and we'll be right back with our discussion of this new nominee. Yeah, Brett Kavanaugh, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. We'll be right back.
shall have no other gods before me. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. In 1954, Americans lived under constant threat of nuclear attack from the USSR. When America's children practiced duck and cover in classrooms across the country, President Eisenhower realized that our pledge had no distinction from any other republic. After hearing a sermon on February 7th of that year, President Eisenhower signed a law adding the words, "under God," to our pledge. The president recognized the true source of unity, of indivisibility, is unwavering submission to the God of the Bible. As we go about our day, let us all remember the only true source of national unity is submission to Almighty God.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth
has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples
of all nations."
This is Bert Harper. Join me for Exploring Missions, revealing the hearts of missionaries, their stories, and lives. Across the world or across town, Exploring Missions, Saturday evenings at 6:30 Central and Sunday afternoons at 1 on American Family Radio.
Who is God? What is He like? How can we know? Your answer to these questions will impact your worship, discipleship, apologetics, and evangelism. Learn from Ravi Zacharias, Josh McDowell, Chip Ingram, and more than 60 other speakers at Southern Evangelical Seminary's 25th Annual National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 12th and 13th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Get the early bird discount when you register by August 1st at ses.edu.
80% of the time, an abortion-minded mother who views an ultrasound or sonogram of her baby will choose life. Here's the story of Candace.
The sonogram sealed the deal for me. My baby was like this tiny little spectrum of hope. And I saw his heart beating on the screen. And knowing that there's life growing inside, I mean, that sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
There are currently preborn centers which do not have an ultrasound machine. Would you sponsor a machine today? Dial pound 250 and say keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Your love could save a life.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. President Trump heads today to a summit meeting of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. To his credit, it will make tangible progress on increasing the member nations' investment in their respective and collective military capabilities. Ironically, such increased NATO defense spending is necessary due to intensifying nuclear and other threats from the man with whom Mr. Trump will be meeting next week in Helsinki, Russia's Vladimir Putin. Unfortunately, NATO summiteers seem likely to ignore the proverbial and strategically alarming elephant in the room, namely, the fact that Turkey is an ally no more. Under Recep Tayyip Erdogan, Turkey is aligning itself not only with Putin's Russia, but China, Iran, and other Sharia supremacists as well. NATO must urgently come to grips with this reality, not ignore, let alone reward it with America's new F-35 fighter, intelligence, and political legitimation. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
My judicial philosophy is straightforward. A judge must be independent and must interpret the law, not make the law. A judge must interpret statutes as written, and a judge must interpret the Constitution as written, informed by history and tradition and precedent.
That was Brett Kavanaugh himself talking about his judicial philosophy. He, of course, is the nomination by President Donald Trump for the next Supreme Court justice, which they are trying to get him confirmed before the next election, which makes a lot of sense to me. Ken Kuklowski is my guest. Ken is with the Senior Counsel and Director of Strategy for First Liberty. Ken, let's talk about the nomination process. Now, it does seem to me that given Kavanaugh's, he does really not have much of a record on the life issue, does he? Nothing really in writing or a lot of decisions. Is that right?
Excuse me, and thank you for keeping me on, Sandy. Actually, that's not true. He has two major pro-life decisions under his belt that I think should be of great encouragement to pro-life Americans. One is Priests for Life, where he sided with religious liberty against Obamacare's abortion mandate, which, of course, was never even found in the words of the statute. It's something the Obama administration bureaucrats, the pro-abortion activists, tapped by President Obama. It's something they invented and then kind of shoved it into the statute after the fact. But the other is, I think, the case that you and I've heard a number of other people raise, and that involves the illegal alien who was trying to get an abortion. And that case is Garza v. Hargan. It's a recent case where you had an illegal alien who came across the border, was taken into federal detention, where it was discovered that she was pregnant, and she said that she wanted to have an abortion. And an Obama-appointed judge ordered that she be allowed to have an abortion. Judge Kavanaugh reversed that ruling for a three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. Now, that, thanks to President Obama's appointees, the D.C. Circuit has become one of the three most liberal federal appeals courts. And so the full court immediately took it en banc, all the judges on that court, and reversed Kavanaugh's panel decision. He then dissented from that en banc decision. And I'll tell you, between both of them, in these, because I pulled key quotes out of his decision, where he said that the government has what he called, quote, permissible interests in favoring fetal life and refraining from facilitating abortion. He went on to say that the majority in the en banc court, the pro-abortion majority, had, quote, badly erred, he said, in adopting a radical, what he called, quote, a radical extension of the Supreme Court's abortion jurisprudence. He went on to say that they were inventing, quote, a new right for unlawful immigrant minors in U.S. government detention to obtain immediate abortion on demand. All of that is as pro-life as you can get. And so I'm happy to cite those examples to anyone who's asking in terms of showing a solid pro-life record from this judge, insofar as he can go under a whole set of what have been very troubling and wrongly decided abortion cases from the U.S. Supreme Court.
Ken, on the other side of that, because those are, well, they might be considered vague. It depends on your perspective. Maybe I'm thinking they will maybe allow Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski to avoid the what's going to be the attacks coming their way, because they're both such strong supporters of Planned Parenthood and abortion. I'm wondering if Brett Kavanaugh is not certainly would be a better candidate for them from their perspective than Amy Coney Barrett. Wouldn't you agree?
I think I can't compare yet to Judge Barrett. She's not yet had a pro-life case, but I do agree that I think Judge Kavanaugh will have an easier time getting those senators that you mentioned to vote for his confirmation. I think he effectively walks a tightrope whereby pro-life Americans like you and I certainly can support Judge Kavanaugh, but that senators like Susan Collins can feel comfortable in saying, okay, I said I'd oppose anyone who made clear that they were going to overrule Roe v. Wade. Those are some pretty pro-lifey statements he made there, but he didn't say anything about overruling Roe, and so I can go ahead and confirm the president's nominee. So I think in that regard, he may actually be very well situated to walk that tightrope, and in doing so, to put the court in a position where we can see meaningful restrictions on abortion. In fact, that's another thing that Judge Kavanaugh said. where he added that, here you go, where Judge Kavanaugh emphasized that, quote, the Supreme Court has repeatedly upheld a wide variety of abortion regulations. And then he goes on to cite parental consent laws, parental notice laws, informed consent laws, waiting periods, and he says, quote, among other regulations. And so I think he's actually very well situated as a nominee in terms of being able to perform that balancing act as we navigate him through the Senate.
Well, I know that Mitch McConnell, that Brett was one of his choices, and I think for this, certainly this is one of the main reasons that he might not lose Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski. You know, the person that I have not heard anyone discuss, though, Ken, that I don't think is a reliable vote, that's Jeff Flake. I mean, no one probably knows any more about the way he has systematically been withholding his support from lower court judges, just out of, it seems, out of spite and out of his dislike and disdain for President Donald Trump. How are we sure that we can count on the vote of a Jeff Flake, really, for any of these nominees?
I'll tell you, Sandy, I have known Jeff Flake for about 18 years, long before he was a U.S. senator. And I think that Senator Flake is certainly making his points on a number of issues, and a number of issues that I strongly disagree with. I completely disagree with his holding up lower court nominees, or at least his threat to do so, in terms of advancing his economic priorities. But I don't think that Senator Flake is going to take that as far as the Supreme Court. I fully expect that Senator Flake is going to give his complete support to Judge Kavanaugh. We'll find out in the next few days because, you know, obviously we move into the confirmation process now. But I have to tell you, I think that Senator Flake is on board, that he understands that this is a historic moment, that the issues he cares about personally at the Supreme Court need Judge Kavanaugh on that bench to create a majority that will rule for conservative in favor of conservative outcomes. And so I think Senator Flake is going to be there at the end of the day.
All right, so then it looks like then it would seem that Brett Kavanaugh has a good chance of passing muster in the Senate. I agree with you. If the Republicans don't lose Collins or Murkowski, if Jeff Flake votes for Kavanaugh, and if then Vice President Pence comes in and weighs in, it seems like
Interrupt quickly to look at the other side of the aisle and to say that I think the 10 unhappiest people in America right now are the 10 U.S. senators who are Democrats in states that went for Donald Trump in 2016. I have to tell you, I think if I were Joe Donnelly in Indiana or Joe Manchin in West Virginia, Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, Bill Nelson in Florida, Claire McCaskill in Missouri, and the list goes on. I think if I'm those people, I'm pretty nervous today because I don't understand. I think Judge Kavanaugh is going to be very popular in those states. Half of voters said that the Supreme Court was very important to them in the 2016 election. Half said it was very important. One out of five, 22%, said it was the number one issue, their top issue when they were voting for president. And those voters went for President Trump by a split of 57 to 41, a plus 16 issue for President Trump. I think Brett Kavanaugh's going to be very popular in those states, and I think those red state Democratic senators are in a world of enormous hurt. I think they are going to be asked today and every day between now and Election Day or between now and the confirmation, they're going to be asked, Senator McCaskill, are you going to vote for Judge Kavanaugh or against Judge Kavanaugh? And I don't care how much she tries to change the subject. If she says, well, let's talk about the environment, let's talk about kids, let's talk about education, they're going to say, no, we'll talk about that later. Judge Kavanaugh, yes or no? No matter what way she answers, she is going to alienate hundreds of thousands of voters in her state who are not going to be happy with her answer and who are not going to take no for an answer. Her base will demand that she opposes Kavanaugh, but the middle votes that she needs to get reelected, they will demand that she supports Kavanaugh. The same thing for Donnelly in Indiana, for Heitkamp in North Dakota. I mean, these people are in trouble. And if people rally to Judge Kavanaugh's side, I believe we went from picking up two or three Senate seats to possibly picking up five or seven Senate seats and getting a Senate who will advance the president's entire conservative agenda, including making it very easy to confirm fantastic judges for the next 2 years.
Yeah, but not if they listen to Dick Durbin, who says that blocking Trump's Supreme Court pick is more important than those red state Democrats being reelected. That's what he's telling them.
Isn't that awesome? You know what? We need to send all of our listeners, all of your listeners here, great pro-life religious liberty Americans, all of you need to send a big fancy thank you note to Dick Durbin and to Harry Reid for ending the judicial filibuster. That's another thing we can be excited about. But send Dick Durbin a big thank you note saying, thank you, Dick Durbin. I'm going to take you up on your offer, and I'm going to wipe out those red state Democrat senators. We're going to get a solid, workable Republican majority to advance the president's agenda, including the next Supreme Court pick, which I'm sure will come in the next 2 years. So I think this timing is perfect. I think a solid confirmation for Judge Kavanaugh. This is going to be the make or break issue that will totally dominate these Senate races in these 10 states. And I think a number of those seats are going to flip Republican with candidates who promise that they will support President Trump's judicial picks.
Ken, let's talk about process for a second. John Kyle, former senator from Arizona, who I just love, by the way, is shepherding, they call him the Sherpa. I've never heard that term used for this process. But he's going to shepherd Brett Kavanaugh through this. But who actually decides? I mean, does Mitch McConnell decide how many questions senators get to ask, how many minutes they get to spend? Is he the one? Is he the decider, as George W. Bush would say?
Great series of questions there. And yes, Sherpa is very much an insider term. I have worked with many Sherpas, not just for the judicial branch, but also for the executive branch. Presidential transition is full of Sherpas. The Sherpa is the person who navigates the Senate confirmation process. And for a Supreme Court justice, you pick a former senator, one who both knows the rules like the back of their hands and also knows the personalities, that personally is on a first-name basis with everyone in the Senate, and he's the one who then, he or she, it was Kelly Ayotte the last time, he is the one who then takes that nominee by the hand to all of these senators' offices, sit down for a cup of coffee, get to know each other, and manages the entire process. And John Kyle, in that regard, and I've known John Kyle for over 15 years, almost 20 years now that I think of it. John Kyle was in Senate leadership, is a consummate gentleman, is an absolute master of Senate procedure, so I think he is a spectacular pick to be Sherpa. I think he will be very sure-footed in getting Judge Kavanaugh through this process. Now, in terms of the specific questions that you asked, everything at the committee level is controlled by Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley from Iowa. After the committee process, then McConnell takes over for what happens on the Senate floor in the final stage.
But he has promised a vote before
Before October 1. The Supreme Court's next term starts October 1, and they want the court at full strength when the next term begins. And I believe they can do it. I believe they will do it.
Yeah, I believe they can, too. It's just an interesting, isn't it interesting, Ken, what wild times we live in. And encouraging, really, for the first time in a lot of years. Ken Kukowski.
Huge opportunity for the American people, for issues that we've been hoping for and praying about for years.
Senior Counsel and Director of Strategic Affairs for First Liberty, Ken Kukowski. Thanks, Ken. Thanks for joining me. Sandy Rios back with you tomorrow on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.